Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. You are more than welcome to ring during the show to ask questions or make comments. We'd also like to let you know there's an abundance of support and resources available through our organization Toward the Light, not the least of which is this tremendous radio show. For more information, please do visit our website, towardthelight.org, and our media website, towardthelight.info. Donations are also appreciated to help support the radio show and the cause behind Toward the Light. This week, I am very pleased to have back a wonderful fellow near-death experiencer who has gained a lot of wisdom as a result of her NDEs. She was on our show last year in May, and we this time are welcoming back to Toward the Light, Beverly Brodsky. Hello, Beverly, and welcome to Toward the Light.
Hello, Juliet.
It's wonderful to have you back with us.
Thank you.
And I wanted to ask you, I know that you, bless you, you've been through quite a lot lately, not the least of which was that fire in Southern California in your very area, and also you've had some health challenges, and you've just come through so beautifully through all of that. So if you want to make any comments about that to our listeners, by all means, feel free to do so, and then we can get more into the topic of the show.
Well, it's just been a trial, that's for sure. And I had a stroke beginning of December. And you'll excuse me if sometimes I have to take a couple moments to think of the end of the sentence.
Sure.
But it's interesting that I had a dream in which I found myself in the hospital, and I was told, this is how it's going to be. There's nothing anyone could have done to have changed it, and that everything was okay, which is like what we hear in our near-death experience. So when I found myself with a stroke, I realized that was part of the plan.
Now, what sort of messages did you glean from having that experience? Because I get a sense that even though, between that and the fire and everything else that you've been through, goodness me, you've really come back, and I sense such a great deal of strength and wisdom in you, even though perhaps superficially you've been slowed down.
Well, I see these as tests. It's for life school.
Yes.
And kind of putting me to the test of living what I learned and what I've been awakening in this past year to new intuitive messages from spirit. And so it was a test as to how good I could live the messages. And I haven't always succeeded, but try again.
Do you feel yourself more empowered and more in touch with some of these, being able to contemplate them and maybe be ever so diligent and deliberate in your thoughts and actions now, because perhaps some things just aren't so easily available or accessible to you as before, if you understand what I'm saying?
Yes. I've learned to be more patient. That was just been one of my my life challenges, and I've had to because just the circumstances. So,
has it frightened you, or are you feeling pretty free of fear at this
point?
Oh,
no, I'm not afraid. I was wondering if I was being called home, and but I got the message that no, this is it's only a test, and that there is more for me to learn here. So, I have no fear of death.
Well, no, I certainly wasn't referring to fear of death, but just with maybe fear of some of the challenges.
I've had to, I guess, clean up my act, and I don't want this to happen again, and I don't want it to be worse than it was, so I'm increasing my spiritual practices, and I guess that will increase the messages coming through, and so it's been a challenge, but also a joy.
One thing that you mentioned, you were wondering if you were being called back home, and this is very interesting because there are a number of us, myself included, who've been actually wondering the same thing. And I guess I'm going to bear my soul to the world right now in admitting that I'm dealing with some very serious health challenges, and even my daughter and I have been talking about this. Well, am I getting ready to transition, or is this just leading to another chapter, a lateral one, as it were, on this plane? But there are such deep changes going on that, and, I'm not a little kid anymore either, so it would stand to reason that one might wonder when one comes upon these challenging situations, okay, am I getting ready to transition, or am I just going to make a lateral move on this plane, but become more awakened as a result of these experiences? So that's very interesting, and you're certainly not alone in that. Now let's talk about, I know that you mentioned the dream, or you mentioned a dream. Now, I don't know if there was another one that you wanted to address, but also you're wanting to address about dealing with the darkness, and of course the focus, the intent to move back toward the light. Of course, that's what we're all about here. So feel free to share a bit about that, what you've been thinking, and what wisdom you've gleaned from all of this.
Well, I've started to speak about my childhood experience, and I had a frightening experience where I saw realms of darkness, and trying to integrate this with my adult experience, which was a radiant one, I've come to believe that there are these levels. There are places where are negative emotions, a realm of bewildered spirits, so to speak, that religions have told us are hell or purgatory, and the radiant realms are what we have been told is called heaven. And they're not opposites. The heavenly realms are more powerful than the dark realms, because where does the darkness go when you turn on the light?
Exactly.
It's just vanquished. So, assuming that we are continuously growing in spirit and wisdom, as I believe we are, what are these temporary detours? And what if we get what we think we deserve? That's an important consideration, because all beings are made of the love and the light, however unaware they are. I saw this for 6 months after my near-death experience. I just saw love and light in everything around me, every molecule of the radiant sky, and every person and every tree and every plant and every animal. And why is this the case? When the spider spins its web, does it use wool? And when the silkworm makes its silk, where does the fabric come from? It comes from the essence of the creature. And so, as above, so below, we have this unknowable source that sheds its unconditional light and love on us. Now, wouldn't it be nice to keep this before us at all times? But
indeed.
But I don't think we can do that in this life. We can invite it to display more of its qualities in our life. But the problem we have here is that we have the duality, and we have in the Kabbalistic tree of life, for example, there's two branches and a central axis. And on the right side is mercy, and the left side is judgment. And in the center between them is compassion or beauty. And it sits at the sacred geometrical point where the human heart is in our bodies. So one of our biggest problems is that we have a tendency to rush to judgment. We like to evaluate everything and decide who is wrong, and we harden our hearts in that way. What I've come to see, and even before my this recent experience, I realized that in the center we can understand the wisdom of what we call in our society the bad things or evil things. We can see that of course we see the wisdom of the good, but there's also a wisdom or a lesson that's provided in our challenges. And we don't really know why things happen, but we can learn from them. And in the Native tradition, there's this there's a story about there are two wolves battling each other, and the one that wins is the one that we feed, the angry one or the kind one.
Yeah, the two wolves were the wolf that is of love or the wolf that is of fear.
Yeah.
And I love that story, I don't know if it's a medicine man or just a father speaking to his son, and the son asks, which wolf will win, love or fear? And then the father says, the one that I feed. And that's such a perfect example. And also getting back to what you were saying about being able to feel that unconditional love and light surrounding you for so long a period, and then, you know, after a while, all of us would slip back into the realm of fear and all of that. And really, it's about the fact that we've allowed ourselves to start vibrating at a lower frequency. But when we can keep ourselves focused in the love, then we start to move back into that higher vibrational frequency and actually can access that state at any time.
Yes. Yes, well, I found that most of us are conditioned or programmed to have this smaller self, and
yes,
we identify with a smaller self.
Yes.
But actually, there are two children inside of the heart, the sacred and the scared. And the one that's connected to the fear, which is false evidence appearing real, or false emotions appearing right.
Very good. Very good.
It needs to be taken by the hand and shown that there is this inner wisdom, that it has joy, it has spontaneity, and it knows the answer before we ask the question. So if we have to take time and nourish this sacred child and connect with softening the heart. And one of the ways that that I do this, and a simple thing that I started with, is to in heart math they have many techniques, and I forget what it's called, but breathe in into your heart and just picture something that you really cherish, and focus on this emotion, and think that, well, this is who I really am. This love is me, nothing else, because that's the truth of the matter. And the more that we, as you say, switch to that channel and identify with that, we can know that that is what we are. And then there are realizations that come. Because we are encoded with the wisdom of creation, God. The program is all hidden and wrapped up. It's like a zip file that we have to find the key to unpack these treasures that are hidden within, and then we ascend up the spiral of evolution, either as personally or as a species.
Wouldn't you say that some of that might occur at certain synchronistic, opportune moments, these portals suddenly open up, either from an experience and or just a specific time when something is meant to open up, and then we are imbued with this knowing? Because I resonate with what you're saying exactly, that you know, we come with all of this intact, but it is a matter of uncovering it, and some of it has to happen in a certain time frequency, even though time is an illusion, but for the sake of dealing with the physical plane, that's the language or understanding that we're using right now. So everything happens in its allotted sequence or time. And I'm seeing a lot of this happening right now, especially. There's just this spontaneous, wonderful awakening that's taking place that I think is, it's so tremendous, and that's actually inspired me quite a bit.
Yes, so many people are awakening, and I look at myself and I think, well, perhaps for me it was, you know, a certain age, waiting until my daughter was raised. But I see so many people going through this, and I think we're at a very powerful transition. And where more people will understand, you know, this wisdom.
Well, I'm really getting a strong sense too that as more and more people overcome their fear of death and realize that they can't die, get ready for eternity, basically. There's going to be a lot of opportunity to create.
Yes.
And to share in very powerful communion with other beings, you know. So this, I think once the stigma and the fear of death or change can be lifted, then people can start to open up to other things and not be so preoccupied with, oh my God, what's going to happen to me kind of nonsense, you know. And as we're able to really share the truth and the validity of this unconditional love, because that's the most ineffable thing I can think of that really can't be described. But as we as experiences start to really emanate this unconditional love, then, you know, there's proof in the pudding right there. We don't have to go to a laboratory to, you know, prove to the world that this is actually very, very real. Now, you were wanting to talk about the life review. Now, let me back up just a little bit. Did you have one or two NDEs? I don't recall.
Oh, I had two.
Okay, I thought so. I thought so.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned that you did want to talk about the life review, and of course that's also very, very interesting. People can hear about this.
Yes. Well, I didn't have one, but I've learned so much from you and other people who have had one. I think it's like a clip notes for life. It shows that every moment counts, that we have no excuses, and that whoever dies with the most love wins, not whoever dies with the most joys, as our culture shows us, because we see that we have to study harder what really matters. We have to love more deeply and release and forgive. We can see ourselves as, you know, we see ourselves from the outside, and we see we get caught up in patterns. If we want to grow and release our patterns, we have to move on. And sometimes it's through a mystical experience, and sometimes it's through our own inner process. But the big lesson we see in the life of you, I think, is that we are connected, that we live in the illusion of separation, and that's the primary problem that we have here.
Oh, hugely. That's such an important point, Evelyn. That I've been, you know, I'm like a perpetual student here, always in the Cosmic University and studying about this stuff. It's vitally important that, you know, we remember that we can never be separated from the Source, because we are part of Source. And admittedly, it does disturb me when people, you know, try to claim that we're separate or we're not God. And we're all a part of that same essence, just creative manifestations of that essence. And so I think that, you know, what you're sharing here is vitally important, and people really, really, really need to remember that.
And when we have a connection, we don't have any problems. It doesn't matter if we're rich or down to our last penny. It doesn't matter if we're healthy or sick. It doesn't matter if we're brilliant or are mentally challenged. Nothing matters when we have that connection, because that's when everything is perfect. And so I think a lot of the challenges that we have in life come from our forgetting this connection, and from that conditioned ego, that conditioned child that thinks that it has to worry about all these things.
And now, do you remember experiencing a profound peace during your NDEs as a result of experiencing the unconditional love?
Oh, yes. Yes, it was ecstasy beyond description. And the feeling that all desires are fulfilled, because we all hunger for the unconditional love. There's a part of us that always, always wants it and is homesick for it. And to have that fulfillment and to no longer be homesick, then we feel full. And I had that. It was the most profound it was the most profound experience. Yes. It's ineffable in a sense. Unfortunately, it's transitory. But we know that we know it, and that we know that it is, that it really truly is, and that peace, that it's like the peace of being connected, and all else comes from that. The fulfillment, the joy, the bliss, the love. And I don't know where I'm going with this, but...
Well, this is a really special message, because I think one thing that I would like to say about the experience of unconditional love is that I don't find that the unconditional love to be transitory, but as we are dealing with the experience of mortality, and we're in this tug of war, as it were, between love and fear, and the, you know, moving into a higher vibrational frequency where we do experience that unconditional love versus slipping back into a lower vibrational frequency where the unconditional love seems to be at bay somewhere. But it's always there, and that's a point that I would like to stress to everyone, is that the unconditional love never ceases, just our perception or experience of it as we're still dealing with the challenges imposed on us by being on the physical plane. Now, you had said something about, I really like this, the involution begets evolution. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? And the two pillars of life, although I know that that's part of the tree of life, and I used to study Kabbalah quite a bit myself.
Well, I kind of touched on it before, in that the involution is that zip file.
Mm-hmm.
It's that, you know, the divine plan is seated in each of us and all around us, but it's hidden, and we have to peel back the layers of our perception to connect with it. And there are many, and again, it's like an onion, there are many layers of understanding. And as we open up the files of wisdom, then we can evolve. So as, say, for example, there's a perception of a level of the mystery of compassion, and we open up that file. Well, the file will open up as an insight or an intuition, and as a feeling, and we'll really understand it from the inside out. And then we can start to evolve, where we're less captured by the conditioned mind, and we understand that everything that happens, it's not personal. People are reacting from what they are, and often people do things that are harmful to us, but we learn to turn off those buttons. And we say, okay, I'm getting into anger here, and I don't need to, because that person needs compassion, that they're treating me so, you know, in an unkind way. And so there are all these little levels of awareness. When we understand them, we can grow. And I think that's the hidden... David Bohm called it. I'm not remembering it, but it's like it's the quantum hologram of what we all are, and it's a matter of unraveling it like strands of DNA and then growing, you know, using that and growing in our wisdom and understanding of who we are.
Well, that's a very good point that you make there. And speaking of the DNA, there's so much that is being brought to light about it now and understood, and the fact that the DNA is actually connects us multi-dimensionally, and also the so-called junk DNA that is 95% to 97%, huge number there, of the DNA is what, you know, stores the memory and experiences and that sort of thing, and there's an amazing amount of wisdom that comes through that. And also I've been reading stuff about the DNA itself being quickened and changed and evolving and that sort of thing. And something else that I wanted to comment about the compassion, because my nature is to be a compassionate person, but I do remember during my NDEs, even seeing people whose behavior was absolutely abominable, I found myself feeling such deep compassion for them. And in fact, just the other day I was thinking about the Bushes and the Clintons and finding myself feeling such compassion for them, because they really, really need it. And and instead of regarding them with contempt and, oh, what miserable, horrible, dangerous beings they are, which, you know, is true in a respect, at the core of their being, they're still of the same substance that we are. And so I just found myself feeling real love for them and the compassion that I feel will ultimately heal, and because it's all again about raising the vibrational frequency into love.
That's,
you know, that's the only thing that's going to work here. Not opposing them, not responding in the way or reacting in the way that they do, but rather reacting or responding, sorry, with love, because that's what is going to raise the vibrational frequency. So this unconditional love and this state of peace is always accessible.
It's like what we've done is to some extent we've become what we fight.
Yes, yes.
And I never thought I'd see America torturing people. We didn't even torture the Nazis, you know, when we captured them. But, you know, we have the fighting evil so hard and focusing on revenge and, you know, it has led us to become, to lose our values, or I think that people are realizing what happened now, and they want to see an end to it. But, you know, that compassion is what, you know, it doesn't make what the other person did right. And there has to be safety. It has to be done. You know, it can't be getting raped or murdered and, you know, say, well, that's okay. But for you to have to release it, it sets us free, because I know I found at times in my life where I was holding on to anger about something that I was making myself smaller, and you know, and so I am in that way, I'm becoming less of the vibration of love instead of what we're growing towards, which is the vibration of love.
Now, did you have some experiences recently? I'm getting a really strong sense that, Now, again, the challenge is between your house and the fires, and I guess the fire was also right upon you, was it not?
Yeah.
I've got a sense that it catapulted you into a space where you're feeling more open and surrendered and even trusting in a lot of ways, because all of these experiences and episodes, and we've all had various ones, I think, in the past year, to be sure, have actually caused us to become more reflective and integrating a lot of things, and indeed not taking things personally, but seeing what the silver lining is in all of this, and how, in fact, it has really served to bring us closer to the light and to our true selfhood.
Yes, yes, because, you know, it takes about 10 seconds for a house to burn.
Yeah.
For, you know, the memories of a lifetime to be destroyed. And that's how fragile all that we cling to is.
Yes.
And I was just very inspired. I was blessed that nothing happened with my home, but I was very inspired by the people who did lose everything. And, you know, they would say, "Well, we have each other."
Yes.
And that's not, and, you know, that when it comes right down to it, that is what our relationships are what really matters in life.
Yes, absolutely. It's so interesting because I was telling a friend recently in an email, I said, well, the two things I have, I can take with me to the other side, and that's love and wisdom. Don't have much else, to be honest.
You have your beautiful website and a show, and you do so much for so many people.
Well, that's what I'm committed to, because I'm sitting there thinking, well, you know, it doesn't matter what my health does, no matter what, I am committed to doing this work. And it's interesting how no matter what experiences or challenges we are faced with, they really provide us a deep opportunity to share love. And boy, I mean, here's another example of triumph over adversity. I mean, look what you've been through, and I've really been, you know, sending lots of love and prayers your way when
Aww.
You know, when I found out all of you were dealing with the fire, so many of you, some of whom I didn't even realize were in that location, and then your recent episode with the stroke, and I just thought, this is an amazingly powerful being, and, you know, you're really a living example of the power of love to triumph over all adversity, and it's quite admirable, my dear, for sure.
Well, I do my best.
I think we might have a call. Do we have a caller?
Yes, you do.
Who are we speaking to, and where are you from?
I am Adrienne, and I'm calling from Chicago.
Well, hello, Adrienne. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Good.
I have a question for either of you, and it's regarding the divine plan. In your experiences, did you, I'm trying to understand free will and maybe the reason why people return back to this plane, I guess you call it, because I read a lot that they aren't quite finished doing what they need to do. So to me, it seems like there is a plan, and that things are kind of plotted out to an extent. So I was wondering if you could talk about that a little.
Beverly, would you like to respond to that question?
Oh, yes, I'd love to. When I came back from my NDE, the one thing that I was certain of was that there was a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was revealed to me by the being of light, it was in response to my question about, you know, evil in the world and things that don't seem right.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, yes, of course. how could I ever have forgotten? And, well, of course, I forgot again. I don't know, but most people who've had NDEs feel that there's a plan and that we're here for a reason, and that, you know, we experience things. There's always a reason, and there's always, as I said, like, you know, there's like a rainbow after the storm. There's something to be learned. Mm-hmm. Even if it's, say, someone who's an Alcoholics Anonymous, and the reason they've had all these terrible things happen to them is to show, yes, I can succeed, I went through it, I came out the other side.
So is there, if there's a plan, then how does our free will fit into that plan? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think it goes back to being motivated from the heart. As I know, sometimes in my younger days, I was so proud of how independent I could be, and I really was, you know, not doing the right thing, or, you know, following the path that I should have. And, you know, we have the choice, but we have to search our hearts for what is really right. Like, what is the path that we're on? Is this path serving our higher good? How does it feel to us? Mm-hmm. That's probably the best intuition we can get.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I would say about that is that when we incarnate into the physical realm, that the soul, or true self, actually sort of has a contract, as it were, or a plan, and that once we are traversing in the physical plane, the egoic mind might have a little bit of space to say, well, I want to try this or do that, to go here or there or what have you. But, well, let me continue. And it might have a little bit of leeway to make some decisions, and then some might have proven to not be such favorable ones, whereas others are. But also, and this has really been my experience in a deep way, is that if the ego mind is not in harmony with the sacred contract, as it were, with what the soul has got programmed for us to experience, then you're going to experience that sort of intervention. And what has happened to me is that often I will feel something in my body tighten up. I'm getting a sense this isn't what I'm supposed to be doing here. Or something will be blocked because the soul is actually overriding the will of the ego. So there is a little bit of free will, but I think that there's been a lot of misunderstanding about exactly what free will constitutes. And we do need to bear in mind that the soul self is very different from the ego identity. And so the soul is going to override the ego. Now, the interesting thing about that, too, is that a lot of NDEers do have the choice to either stay on the other side or to return to the physical plane for the sake of their families or what have you. Then some of those are not given a choice.
Right. Again, I wasn't given a choice.
Yeah, and me neither, see. So I think that, again, because the sacred contract, as it were, with the soul, we've got work to do. We're just not going to be exempt from it.
Right. That's kind of what I get from reading a lot of the NDEs, not having had one myself. But that's where I was confused, is, you know, if there's a plan, then how does free will fit into that? Like, but that makes sense.
Okay, great.
Great. Okay, thank you both so much.
You're so welcome, Adina. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Bye-bye. These are really good points, Beverly, because a lot of people are, you know, they're confused about that very thing. And yet there is so much that goes on, you know, and I marvel myself how some NDEs just, you know, they choose to come back and, oh, blimey, I was having a wrestling match. I was having a sobbing fit. Oh, no, please, no.
I know. I was too. But, you know, a lot of the things that seem wrong, as I was saying, that there's the things that we call bad or wrong,
right. Yeah.
That happen to us, and that could be part of our soul contract to experience that and to learn, you know, to learn the lesson of love the hard way.
Absolutely. And I also try to refrain from using the words
I know.
Bad or wrong, even though, you know, they're part of the language and there's nothing wrong with that, but to just to give it more clarity, because, you know, people need to move away from the judge and the judgment and the fear,
yeah,
bracket of mentality. So I like to use the terms what works versus what doesn't work.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, you know, just like going into a laboratory and experimenting with something. All right, let's try this nasty thing out and see if it works. All right, it doesn't work, so that's not appropriate or what have you. Instead of saying, oh, that's bad or that's wrong, they say, well, that doesn't work. Next. So we can maintain a more neutral, compassionate attitude about it.
Well, and then also, I want to talk about self-judgment, because often we can be our own worst critics.
Oh, indeed.
And the most important thing that a child does is to learn to walk. And the child, when it falls down and makes mistakes, 1,000 times, 10,000 times, what do we do as parents or as, you know, aunts or uncles? We just say, we encourage them. We say, we know you're going to make it. We know you can do it. You know, unless there's a physical handicap, every child will learn to walk, but they'll make many mistakes and have many falls along the way. And so it is in their life path. We may have made, you know, the wrong decision many times, but now we know we're on the right path. It feels good, and from this point on, our life review is getting better.
And that's a good point you made too about something that feels good, because, of course, I'm one who always condones and encourages intuition and telepathy and being in the heart center. And I think that when we are actually onto something, we will feel good. And you know, I'll tell people, whether I'm giving them a counseling session, a reading, or just in a conversation, I will encourage them, if something feels really good from within. And again, we're talking about the soul intervening too, because
mm-hmm.
you'll just feel this sense of balance, of peace, of goodness, because when something is out of balance, no, it's not going to feel good. So I encourage people to slow down and pay attention, and there again, you certainly have been made to slow down by the circumstances that have happened in your life recently, and I can't help but think that has really helped you to just kind of check in with your own divinity, as it were, and not be so readily caught up with the distractions of the physical plane. So
yeah,
there's a silver lining right there.
Yes, there is.
There are always
signs, and it's just a matter of slowing down and listening to them and going on the internet. Not the internet.
Yeah, the internet. Very good.
Sometimes we have to do that.
Well, that's interesting, speaking of internet, because I was actually thrown offline for 3 weeks, and I thought, well, all right, can't do my work in this context right now.
Oh, dear. Oh.
But what it did for me was it enabled me to read and play my piano and sing and just be. Just be quiet. A happily imposed holiday because I don't seem to know how to take a break. And my daughter would keep after me, Mom, you need to take a break. You need to rest. You need to stop. And I was made to stop because I'm such a workaholic. So I went into the internet because I couldn't get on the internet. So that's a good point. And interestingly with that, I was also thinking about, okay, this is serving my work now. Yes, I was frustrated, I'm not going to lie, but at the same time I realized, okay, there's a divine reason for this going on as well.
Uh-huh.
And I was able to see that and just feel a sense of relief. Yeah, it's great to be able to take a break, and I've got a legitimate excuse to take a break. So
now you've got to schedule those breaks periodically so that they don't happen to you unexpectedly.
That's a very, very good point, and I've been thinking about that very thing. I thought, okay, Juliet, you better schedule your breaks and limit the work and not let it overtake your life, because I just feel like I want to keep serving and working all the time. And yet I need to pull back and just be and not feel like I've always got to be at the beck and call of all of those whom I love throughout the world, those I've met and those who I've yet to meet. So this is a really, really, really good point for all of us, because, and also just to remind people not to be alarmed, not to be afraid if you experience challenges or setbacks, because they're all serving to help us turn this corner. Again, there's this quickening going on. There's a tremendous awakening going on. So if we can pay attention to this and not just default to being angry and frustrated and fighting it, but just saying, okay, what is the message here? What can I be doing with this to serve the greater good? That will help all of us tremendously.
Yes.
And really, really good point here. Well, we've got just about 3 more minutes here, a couple more minutes. Have you got anything that you would like to share with us in closing? Maybe any speaking engagements that you might have coming up or what have you?
Oh, well, at this point, I've cleared my schedule. I am literally taking time off. What I want to say that getting back to the love, that we come from this love and we go through all of our trials to grow in our knowledge and expression of the love, and we return to the infinite love which is our source when we leave this world. That is who and what we really are, and that's why we are here. And what the universe was created from this love, it's like the spider spinning its web, and we can use this in our life to heal that hurt, that homesickness we have for that unconditional love. So be here now and live it with love.
Oh, that's so wonderful, Beverly. I so appreciate your sharing, and I share with you that homesickness, and yet I can also simultaneously feel so elated that really, even though it was so heartbreaking for me to be sent back after all of my NDEs, I'm now experiencing the elation of, with people like you, with precious souls like you, being able to share these experiences, to embody this love and to raise a vibrational frequency through this, that we can really be a living example of this love. And what's so beautiful about it is it doesn't matter our culture or what country we're from, or if we're male or female or young or old or any sort of superficial status that we may incur on the physical plane, the message is so profound, coming from the simplest to the most lofty of individuals who've been through near-death and similar states. And I think it's paramount that we are able to share this and let everyone know that this is for all of us. It's not just privileged individuals who get to experience this. No, no, no. It's for everyone. We're all a part of this same divine source and essence. And I'm so grateful for people like you, Beverly, who've come on to the show to share all of this, because it's very, very meaningful. Thank you for being with us. And we come to another to the end of another transmission of Taught the Light, leading back to the source. If this program has been meaningful and uplifting to you, we hope you will send a donation to help support the show and keep us on the air. And also, if you know someone or if you yourself would like to be a guest on Taught the Light, by all means, you are more than welcome to contact me. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. Next week, we will have John J. Harper on Toward the Light, so you won't want to miss that show. Love and light to all of you. We will speak to you next week.